WAKY, Louisville. Johnny Randolph, 79. WAKY.
No, ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing wrong with your radio. You are tuned to AM 1150 and 106.9 FM WMST. I played that because that would be the perfect way to bring on our next guest. Joining us via phone, Johnny Randolph, who spent 10 years at that legendary station, WAKY in Louisville from 1967 to 1977, becoming program director in 1970. Good morning, Mr. Randolph. Johnny, how you doing?
Good morning, and I'm Johnny. Hi, Chris.
Very good. I'm glad you could take the time to speak with us this morning.
Oh, love to. I'm a radio guy like you. Always ready to do that.
It gets in your blood, and once it gets in your blood, you cannot get a transfusion to get it out, can you?
That is a good point.
Once a radio guy, always a radio guy.
Yep.
So tell us how you got started into radio and what career moves led you to WAKY.
I was a newspaper boy in a little tiny town in Ohio, and the program director for a radio station down the road, Middletown, which is between Dayton and Cincinnati, and I just became intrigued, and I just basically just talked him into letting me come to work for them, and did, and I stayed there through high school and college, and then went to Louisville.
So how old were you when you first got your first radio gig?
I was a teenager. I'd say maybe 13, 14. My parents had to drive me to work. I remember that.
That's interesting because you remember when you had to have a restricted radio telephone operator's permit just to even turn the transmitter on and off. And
absolutely.
Well, I had that.
Mine, it's expired. Means nothing anymore, but I still have mine.
I do, too. I had that at age 15 before I had my driver's license at 16.
That sounds like me.
And Mom and Dad had to take turns driving me back and forth to work over at Grayson. I started my career at WGOH in Grayson, Kentucky, a little 5,000-watt AM station, and we had a FM sister station. But anyhow, my dad was a radio guy, but his dad talked him out of radio, and he became a school teacher, but he was always interested in it. And what he would do is he'd follow me over to work a lot of times just to be around it and to catch it. And he enjoyed it an awful lot, too. Something we could learn and explore
story.
Together.
Good story. I bet he would much rather have been in radio than teaching a bunch of bratty kids. who knows?
Well, he started teaching in 1972, about the same time you were hitting it big time at WAKY. So let's back up here. And you said you went to Louisville from Ohio. And you didn't start at WAKY, did you?
No, it was the WKLO, which was the competition. And I was there for a year and a half and ceremoniously got fired. Everybody in radio has to get fired once, I suppose. At least that's how I rationalize it. And so I got fired from WKLO and went over to WAKY and stayed there for 10 years. And it was still there. I mean, it's on FM now, and I've been there second time around 8 years. So I guess I'm trying to relive my youth.
So what happened at WKLO? A lot of times somebody says they got fired for saying something on the air or doing something that didn't please a general manager or something. So if you could tell us what happened.
I can tell you it was nothing that I did. It happened right after a Christmas party, radio station Christmas party in 1966, and my wife at the time, I've been married twice, that also happens all the time in radio.
Well, I'm on my second. My last one.
That's how it works, but my wife at the time got rather inebriated at the party, and she was a Joan Rivers type. And
oh, no.
The manager of the station told the program director, he said, I want no one working for me that's married to a woman like that.
Oh, no.
And that was it.
Wow.
I know, crazy, but hey, turned out to work out well in my favor.
Sometimes the Lord works in mysterious ways, even through...
I'm anxious to ask the Lord about that, too.
But it's funny, you mentioned WKLO, and I know a lot of the backstory because I have got John Quincy's Wacky Remembered. So I know a lot of these stories, and that kind of helped me do my research in talking to you this morning. I love that. But, you know, even though you were unceremoniously fired by WKLO, you got back at them on a couple different occasions, didn't you?
Yeah.
Statute of limitations are up. We can talk about it now.
Sure. Yeah. The statute of limitations have run out. And by the way, and I know where you're going with, I know where you're going with that, Christy. I was actually a very dangerous thing that I did at the time and very foolish. And I made sure that I never told anyone about this trick I pulled on them. And for years, probably 10, 11 years, and I think I told John Quincy, the guy that has the historical 79 WAKY website. So you're talking about the time when I got to put the wacky jingles on WKLO, right?
Yes, that is one of the occasions I'm talking about.
I was at Wacky. And, of course, the thing is to really put some damage on WKLO. And it gets a little complicated here is you got to follow the bouncing ball. The transmitting location or the tower site for WKLO in Louisville is actually New Albany, Indiana. And it was manned. They had an engineer there all the time. But I knew that this engineer spent the whole time on a single line telephone. Single line is very important here, as you'll find out. And so he was always talking to his girlfriend every day. And he never listened to the radio station because it interfered with his talking to the girlfriend. So anyway, this engineer is sitting over there, and the way that you got the audio from the studio to the transmitter was through a telephone line, and I knew where the telephone line was at WKLO. Now, granted, I'm a Wacky now, so I put 90 minutes of Wacky jingles on a cassette player and crawled up the fire escape at the radio station, snipped the program line feeding the transmitter in New Albany and put on the Wacky jingles. In other words, I disconnected the studio and all you could hear on WKLO were Wacky jingles, and that went on for over an hour, and they tried to call the engineer at the transmitter, girlfriend. So, and that's really dangerous stuff. I mean, that's jail time, I suppose, but after all this time, so what?
It makes a good story, though. So this was during a ratings period, so everybody was listening to either Wacky or KLO. But if you were tuned to KLO, all you heard was Wacky jingles for 90 minutes.
That's right.
And they couldn't call the transmitter. He was on the phone with his girlfriend, so the general manager or manager had to run out, drive out to the transmitter and tell him to yank it off.
Yeah. That's how it worked.
And, of course, there was another time where you bested WKLO. I believe there was a jock by the name of Ken Douglas, was it?
Yeah, English guy, yes.
And there was a big interview, and he was having trouble with a tape recorder.
Oh, boy, you you picked out the good ones. The Beatles had, they never appeared in Louisville, but the Beatles had a press conference in Chicago, and it's supposed to be a big deal. And it was, and Ken Douglas was an English disc jockey at WKLO, and I am now at Wacky. And so we both went up, not together, we both flew to Chicago to be at the press conference. And, of course, the thing back then, and you know all about this, Chris, you know, the big deal is you want to try and get one of the Beatles to say, hey, I'm John Lennon, and you're listening to Wacky, and all that stuff. And, of course, Ken Douglas being English, and he knew the Beatles but before they became big. So he's trying to do the same thing, but Ken did not really know how to operate that cassette recorder. So I said, and I knew Ken because I used to work with Ken at WKLO. I said, let me show you, Ken, how to do it. So I stepped aside a little bit, and I said in the recorder, I said, attention WKLO, this is Johnny Randolph at Wacky. Never send a boy to do a man's job. And I set the recorder so that it would not record, but you couldn't tell it.
It was on safe mode, so the thing was
safe
spinning.
Safe mode, exactly.
But nothing was recording.
Except me doing that, yeah.
So you had all the goodies from the Beatles, and that's all they had.
That's right.
Now, there was a lot of, would you say, friendly rivalry, or was it pretty cutthroat between Wacky and KLO back in those days? From those two stories, it seems like it was extremely competitive.
It was very competitive, and that is on my end. I think that the disc jockeys at both stations used to share a beer now and then and whatever, but I never knew about it because I would have not allowed it. I know I sound like I'm a terribly mean guy.
No, you just don't want the trade secrets to get out to the other guy.
That is very true. So those were a couple of things. I mean, there are other things. We had a news van, and I would park the news van in front of the WKLO studio, the showcase studio at night, and it would be there from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And I mean, it was just stuff like that went on and on. But it was fun.
So it was a rivalry, but not a very, very bitter one.
I was the only one that was bitter, and I was very bitter because I didn't think I deserved to get fired.
No, it had a great on-air sound, and one little incident at the Christmas party, which coming up at the Christmas season, let that be a warning to you, children. I don't think I'll bring my wife to the Christmas party this year. She might, no, I'm just teasing. She wouldn't do that to me. I hope she would. My ex-wife, I don't know about that. But anyhow, you came on the scene in 1967 at Wacky, spent 3 years as a jock there before becoming program director.
Yes.
And around that time is when I kind of look at the dream team at Wacky. You had a lineup of all-star jocks that were all top of the field. In 1972, you were program director of the year. Wacky was station of the year. Sometime along those lines, one of the disc jockeys, Gary Burbank, which held a big role at 700 WLW for many years.
Absolutely.
Still hear him on the air with some of his syndicated work, Earl Pitt's American.
Yeah.
Which I believe we used to air here at WMST at one time. So tell us a little bit about your times as program director and leading that all-star cast.
Well, thank you for that lead-up. I started out as assistant program director and ended up as program director. And it was actually what they did. They fired my predecessor and announced it to the DJ staff. And said that, I've been assistant program director, and said that I was going to be interim program director because I'm going to do a nationwide search to find someone. And Gary Burbank stood up and said, what about Randolph? And the manager said, well, Randolph does a good job, but he has never been a full-fledged program director before. And Gary Burbank says, well, I'm going down the street for about 30 minutes and get a beer. Anybody want to come along with me? And when we get back, if Randolph is at PD, we're walking out.
Whoa.
So there's me and the general manager sitting in the room. It'd be kind of like you and Hayes, your CEO, sitting in a room and there's nobody there except the two of you. Say, gee, now what? So they...
You talk about throwing some major weight around. You had some guys that were top in the market, top in the nation, and they're just walking out. They believed in you. And one of the things that is interesting to point out here, too, not only were you program director at this juncture after that, you also kept an air shift.
I did because I always thought that you can't really be a program director. At least I can't. I mean, a lot of people do. I can't. I just had to get the feel of it, even though it was for a mere 2 hours a day. But always did that. And my personal goal was to have everybody on the air be better than I was. Not that I wasn't trying. I mean, you're just... there's a limit to everybody, and I just try and do the best I could, but I wanted guys always better than me. And so, I mean, you know, Burbank is great, Bill Bailey. The other thing I wanted to do was to have the bulk of the staff on in a time slot that they would not sound right in any other time slot. In other words, Bill Bailey did mornings. He would not do well at all, say, working at nights. And Coyote Calhoun was at nights. You wouldn't dare hit put him on in the morning. So that was my philosophy.
You had a place for everybody and everybody in their place. Now, talk a little bit about that team. You mentioned Bill Bailey. He was the Duke of Louisville.
Right.
And I bet he was fun to be around and sometimes a challenge to handle.
He was. Bill was kind of high maintenance. And Bill, a lot of people give me credit for bringing him to Louisville, and that's really not the case. He was hired at WKLO shortly after I went to WKLO, so I worked with him. I worked nights, he worked mornings, so I didn't see him a whole lot. But when I went to Wacky, the goal was to get Bill Bailey out of Louisville because he was the big dog over there at WKLO, and we just could not make a dent at Wacky with Bill Bailey. So we got him out. I sent out tapes of him to radio stations all over the country, and finally one in Chicago hired him. So we got rid of him, and after a six-month contract deal, he could go anywhere he wanted to in Louisville. So at the end of 6 months, I hired him from Chicago, WLS, hired him back to Louisville. And yeah, he's kind of high maintenance, but Bailey was very astute. This will surprise you, Chris. Bailey was very well read with the Bible. He never talked about religion or anything, but he was very astute, a very good reader, and a very good drinker. And he just did his thing, and the rest is kind of history.
Right after Bailey, you had another gentleman, and I'm talking about probably putting you in the early part of the 70s in this. After Bailey, you had Dude Walker.
And Dude Walker was one of the first people. Actually, the PD that got fired, I was assistant PD, he hired Dude Walker out of Memphis, who is still alive, still married, but to the same woman, just celebrated his 52nd anniversary over the weekend. But he was the only DJ at Wacky at the time that was married. So, you know, he was in his world, and the rest of us were in another world. But Dude Walker was actually responsible for us getting Gary Burbank. He told me about Burbank in Memphis, so I contacted Burbank and gave him that name. His name was Johnny Apollo. Well, that's not his real name, but his air name was Johnny Apollo. I thought, well, we had too many Johnnies at this radio station. We got to change that. And Dude Walker, solid pro, great voice. My gosh, what a voice that guy had. But, dude's a fine guy.
And then you had the shift right after Dude Walker, right?
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah, Walker used to work evenings, and then he worked 10 to 1 midday, and I worked 1 to 3, in Burbank.
And then
we had Lee Masters, who's the guy that's president of NPR Radio right now, Jarl Mohn. No wonder he used the name Lee Masters. And he was an exceptional guy. I mean, well, that kind of goes without saying. I mean, here the guy is heading up National Public Radio and used to be a Wacky DJ. How strange is that?
Now, did he also, someone else also have success? Who founded the television network? Was that him? Or?
Yes, that was him. He had something to do with MTV, but he had something more to do with ETV, and he sold ETV for $8 million. So he's done very well.
Wow.
And well, he should. He's a smart guy.
And you had a lot of other people that filled out the rest of the schedule as far as fill-ins and whatnot. Anybody that just kind of pop out in your mind? We had Mason Lee Dixon.
Mason Lee did all night, and Mason Lee is retired. Ashley's in very poor health. He had a couple of bad brain strokes this past February. But Mason was with us for full 5-6 years, I suppose. Weirdbeard, who is deceased, he had either MD or MS, I can't remember which. And so he was with us. And Bailey, and Burbank. So I guess that about rounds it out. I hope I haven't forgotten anybody.
You had all kinds of people that would do fill in from here and there, and there's some other people that rounded out the schedule in earlier years and maybe later years. But those were the key people during some of what you would call the glory days at Wacky.
It was, and then I left in 1978, I believe. It became apparent that we could not sustain that degree of popularity simply because, well, it was AM, and this is not a reflection on AM stations at all, but the FM stations in Louisville were coming on and were really going to give us a run for our money. And the 79 station had a terrible signal at night, just terrible. And so there was no way we were going to be able to keep up that audience in numbers with FMs coming along. So I didn't want to be there when it went down, so I left. And a couple years later, Wacky went away, not because I left. I mean, it was just when I was describing what was happening to the signal in the facility. So it went away. It was gone for, 25 years, I suppose. And then about 8 years ago, a man secured the call letters and a frequency and put Wacky back on the air on FM, wanted me to be part of it, and I'd retired. And he said, well, I just consult. And I said, well, okay, I'll do that. I'll help you out there.
And then you got rooked into it.
I got rooked. true story, we put Wacky, which is 103.5, now put it on the air in May, 8.5 years ago. And I was on my way to Florida. And I mean, I should have prefaced this by saying I've lived in Danville. I live in Danville right now. I lived here since 1980. And so my wife and I were going down to Florida and stay for, I was retired, but we stayed for a couple of months maybe. And so Wacky asked me if I'd come over to Louisville and play the first record on the new Wacky, which would have been the Purple People Eater, which is what started the whole.
Very appropriate.
Yeah, sure. And I went over there. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We put Wacky FM on the air, and the owner wanted to replicate it kind of like the old Wacky was. A lot of jingles and goofy stuff, and so that's kind of right down my alley. So we put the station on. My wife and I are driving from Louisville to Florida. And I said, those are real nice people at this station, and I wish them well, but nobody's going to care about a radio station that's been gone for about 25 years. It's a no-brainer to me. And I'm on, been down in Florida, on the beach, laying in the sand. First 5 minutes I've gotten there, phone rings, and it's Wacky when we come back and do an air shift. I've been in country radio for 20 years. I don't think I can do it, but I'll give it a try. So I'm still doing it.
And the rest is history. You can currently listen to him on the stream, or if you're in the Louisville area, on 103.5 WAKY. How does it feel to say those call letters again?
It's a lot of fun. It really is. And the ironic thing is that I've been at Wacky twice, the AM and the FM, but been at WKLO twice. When I moved from WKLO over to Wacky, the WKLO station eventually went away in Louisville, and me and another guy built and owned WKLO in Danville here and had it for about 14 years until we sold it, I think it was the mid-90s. So I was the WKLO twice and Wacky twice, different facilities and everything.
It's all come full circle. Thank you so much for joining us.
Man, yep.
I've enjoyed it. It's all went way too quick. And if you ever get hard up for a guest disc jockey, I would be happy to drive down there and volunteer.
By golly, be careful what you wish for, Chris.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Johnny Randolph of WAKY the second time around. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Then you hear your song and you start to sing along as the radio blows all your blues away.